Mike Clark is my collaborator at the Indian House. Some information on the decision aids we're using, and also a group of people that are working with the foundation with insured patients. And we have no relationships to disclose. A lot of key supporters here: the National Nursing Centers Consortium, the Informed Medical Decisions Foundation, the Pennsylvania Governor's Office of Healthcare Reform, Public Health Management Corporation, and Temple University. So many collaborators. We started in this project while Andrew Grosso, who some in the room know, was director of Ed Randell, our former governor's Office of Healthcare Reform. And a number, that project involved primary care practices and a pay-for-performance program, and was very favorable to nurse practitioners. It started out in the southeast corner where Philadelphia is, and one quarter of the 32 original practices were nurse practitioner-led primary care practices. And Anne, his background is as a lawyer. So some of her interest in shared decision-making was related to raising the bar for informed consent. And she also was a believer that having this be available to underserved populations. From the very beginning, and we really didn't know what we were doing as we started out, that Dartmouth has a Center for Shared Decision Making, and Ann and I went up to Dartmouth. Richard Wexler, who chairs the foundation, and Kate Clay, who at that point was in charge of the Center for Shared Decision Making at Dartmouth, had really supported us from the beginning. And as we began the program, we started in 2010, then in five nurse practitioner practices, all that were part of the Governor's Chronic Care Initiative. And we used decision aids from the foundation, and they actually gave those to us without cost. The money that came with from the Office of Healthcare Reform, even though everything was tight, it was money at the end of the year that they needed to get rid of. So we got a small amount of money for us to start this. And I have to say, we only got money the first year, and we're into the fourth year. We've kept it going, and we're hoping we'll get some more money in the future. As we began, the decision aids have both a booklet and a DVD, and they could be reviewed in the centers themselves. We had individual DVD players, headphones, and with covers so we didn't contaminate one patient to the next. Or they could take them home if they actually had the ability, and we encouraged that to view it with their families. And at that point initially, and Mike was a nurse practitioner, we had a nurse practitioner then was following up either in person or over the phone doing coaching, because the level of the literacy in the booklet was very high. The DVDs were much better for the population we were serving, but we still felt with the medical terminology that we needed some coaching. The interesting thing, and it really focused when Mike did the coaching, on looking at, was he really answering questions about the decision? Was he helping the person fit that decision into their own value system? Or was he helping to support them in making their decision? Again, we only had money the first year, so how are we going to keep it going? We have RN care managers at the five nursing centers, and so what we did in terms of long-term sustainability is the RN care managers are coaching on a lot of chronic care patients and self-management. So we turned over the coaching for the self-management to the in-place RN care managements, who are functioning in the same way that Mike was. But there was a benefit to that, too, because they knew the patients, where when Mike was doing it, he was a new novel, you know, another person to intervene into the process. The centers all serve, they're serving either public housing residents or chronically homeless. They were 20, depending on the site, 20% to 40% uninsured, 75% to 55% Medicaid, and 5% Medicare or private insurance. We had posters that we put up, and we had a smaller list of decision aids when we began starting with the program. And these posters were put up in the waiting rooms of the sites. We also we labeled it Better Decisions Together, and we had buttons, Ask Us About, in Spanish English, Better Decisions Together. We then, with the foundation, we're the only group that were using it for uninsured and Medicaid population. They were all using them for private insured populations. So they became very interested in helping us move forward. And so we began to look at what were the gender-neutral topics that we used. And for those topics, we did chronic low back pain was 9 that we used. Chronic pain management were 2 that were used. Depression 4. Diabetes, we used 35 in this first year that we looked at. Hip arthroplasty, 2. Knee arthroplasty, 4. And then weight loss surgery as we began. And the foundation was kind of interested in looking at, well, how do we compare to a much larger sample from Dartmouth, Mass General, University of North Carolina, big health systems. And if you can see here, we had fewer female patients, and that's primarily because one of our homeless centers, Mary Howitzer, is primarily male. Those with less than a high school graduation, we were 78% to their 35. 90%, we have a younger population under 60. 80% of ours were black, non-Hispanic. And 76 of ours said they were bothered a lot by the health problem they were watching the decision aid for. One of the things the foundation was concerned about, and we're going to have a visit in November from the Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, because people have taken the position that underserved populations, low-income families, wouldn't be interested and they wouldn't understand. And so we're their way of showing that that's not true. So if we look just at diabetes when we're a little bit closer, where we had 35 and there were 292 in the larger demonstration sites, you can see that 86% of our patients, prior to viewing it, were taking blood pressure medicines, less taking cholesterol. And we all know those are very expensive medicines, so it's hard for uninsured patients. 57% taking blood pressure medicine. And of course, we had 43% smoking versus their less than 20. If we look at diabetes only again, post-viewing, 92% of our patients are taking or planning to talk about these medications with their primary care providers. Again, with cholesterol, we're almost up to this private population. And in terms of blood pressure medicine, we're ahead again there. And also post-viewing, planning to talk to the provider about losing weight, we have 50% versus their 34, 50% in terms of physical activity, 66% healthy diet. I'm sorry, I went back there. And 32% were just about even on seeing an eye doctor. I'm going to, Mike. Come up, and I should say, Mike is a geriatric nurse practitioner, and he teaches in our graduate program at Temple.
Thanks, Nancy. First, thank you, everybody. It's great to be here. It's been so great to work with Nancy, although those of you who know Nancy know that I don't have to say that. That's been a wonderful experience. So I basically wanted to talk about some of the outcomes. It definitely was a pilot project to prove that in this population that it worked and that there was an interest and it had an impact. We had an N of 80, so in terms of, it's pretty good for a pilot study, but certainly we would like to have more robust numbers. In our population, the DVD was the thing. So the booklets are fairly dense, and it's interesting that these are used in other settings. So a lot of private insurers, for instance, will pay the cost in private practices. And the information we got, the pushback we got from the foundation was that the booklets were the thing and the DVDs were kind of like ancillary to the booklets. For our population, it was all about the DVDs. And I think there's a number of reasons. The DVDs are really well done. They really try to have good diversity in the actors, the standardized patients or the actors who are in the DVDs. And I think it really pulls the patients in. So they see it not just as chunks of information, they see it as experience. There's a narrative associated with the DVDs that you don't get really so much, I think, in the booklets. So that was something that's unique with our population, that the DVDs are really important. One of the interesting things, too, is that the patients really, surprisingly, really felt very entitled to be part of the decision-making process. And this did surprise some people in terms of what we found with this, I would say, that they really felt like they were an extremely important. And I think those of you that have worked with underserved populations know how important the family and the informal social network is, particularly in certain cultures, in terms of coming to a collaborative decision, that it's not so much of an individual metaphor, it's more of a collaborative group decision. So what the DVDs allow people to do is take the DVDs home, they watch it sometimes with families, have the discussion, and then can come back to talk with their primary care provider about things. And what happened is after watching the DVDs, their sense of having the right for empowerment or self-determination actually went up after watching the DVDs. So we thought that that was really interesting. So future directions. I just wanted to talk about a few points with my own personal experience with this. The decision aids are a product. Shared decision making is a process. So the thing that I found is, of course, we were a demonstration project, so we were an extra layer for all of the health centers. So we had this push in the beginning of more work and who's going to do it. And so the extra work was that the people who gave out the DVD had to fill out a form and fax it, because we obviously were interested in outcomes, so there had to be some way to get that data. So that was a little bit of a push initially. We also had to kind of wander around as to who should drive the process. So first there was a typical task orientation of, well, let's delegate it to the medical assistants, and that didn't necessarily work so well. The NPs could identify patients, but they were really kind of too busy to really own the process. So I think now we're into the care managers, the RN care managers. And what I've found is that this whole process is almost a barometer of the challenges that we're facing with, you know, pay for performance, because we're all really kind of freaked out about one more thing that we have to do. So we have to be able to integrate some of these processes that drive quality outcomes within the normal flow of the work. So I think that what I see is that this is a barometer for where we need to be heading with this. So I think that, it has a very pragmatic component. Certainly we could say that from an ethical point of view, it's beneficence versus justice, that, you know, people should be able to make their own decisions. But from a very pragmatic point of view, I think this is a challenge that we really need to face. So shared decision-making as a process has some real advantages to it. One is that it gives people time to reflect and absorb. The other thing is that all of the decision aids are not the same. Some of them are individual decisions. So am I going to go to see an orthopedic surgeon for low back pain or an arthroplasty? Well, I think as a busy clinician, it's easy for us to say, oh, let's send them and they'll get information and the specialist will help them make the decision. But we all know that if I send somebody to a surgeon, they're going to want to cut, right? So they're not there to educate. I mean, the people that are have the least time to really do this kind of decision support are the specialists. So there were some individual things. So the decision aids really helped. Like, the people I talked to didn't realize how much time there would be in recovery from a knee replacement, or the outcomes data associated with low back, you know, disc surgery. So I talked to a number of people who really changed their mind on it. They thought the surgery was just a quick fix, that, you know, it was going to fix everything. And after watching the decision aids, they thought differently. The other thing is that a lot of decisions have a trajectory. They have like an algorithm associated with it. So like with prostate-specific antigen testing, I think we're becoming more aware that you're committing to a whole series of decisions. Well, as a busy practitioner, what we tend to do is we only have time to talk about this step. So the patient takes this step, but they don't realize that then it's going to involve an ultrasound, a biopsy, and then what do you do with indeterminate results, all of those kinds of things. So it really helps people to see a longitudinal view. The decision aids do a really good job of working with that. Let's see what other points I had here. So I think we're moving in a good direction. I think the care managers are definitely a good way to go. And I've been attending meetings with the National Alliance for Quality Care. And one of the things that's coming out is that the role for the RN is not well defined in primary care settings right now, that a lot of busy practices want to chop up things in the task level and give it to, you know, medical assistants and other people as if it's just these tasks that need to be done. I think shared decision making gets to the point that this needs to be a relational process and about dialogue. So I think it's exciting for some of the roles that are coming in with pay for performance systems to make the case. Here we have kind of a way to offer a structure or support or scaffold for that role, and I think I'm real excited to see how that actually all plays out. So I'm good. Thanks. And I would say on that clinicians still need to nuance things. So, for instance, in PSA, they'll use, you know, United States Preventive Services Task Force, but it's not a heterogeneous population, so they have to make accommodations. So if you have an African-American man of 40 with a high history of prevalence of prostate cancer in the family, you have to make micro adjustments in these things. So that's one of the learning curves for the practitioners. What I did was I made up a glossary or made up a list of all the decision aids with a short paragraph of what was in them. Because for clinicians, if you've got 25 decision aids, they each take about 30, 35 minutes to watch the DVD. So nobody's going to watch 30, 35. So you needed to give them, but you also in the education needed to have dialogue with the clinicians to say, there's still a lot of individualization of this that needs to be done.
And we had a clinician that from all the take home wanted to watch themselves about a problem that they were interested in themselves. So that, and they could take as many as they wanted home. They'd at least take one home and watch it so they knew what we were doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.